In a stadium rich with tradition, the lights shine the brightest. This is The Camp. Now, here's your host, Zach Heilprin, on the Wisconsin Sports Zone Radio Network.
Yes, welcome into The Camp. Zach Heilprin, Jesse Temple with you. Back in fall camp. Badgers were on the field earlier today. We'll get to that in a little bit. As usual, or I should say, this is going to become usual. I want to remind everybody to please, please, on whatever app that you use, whether it's Spotify or Apple or wherever you get listening to this podcast, please rate, subscribe, review if you'd like. But the first two important for us. We appreciate everybody that listens as we get here into the season. This is episode number 2 of our sixth season of The Camp. And we got to see some on-field work today, an extended, I should say, session of on-field work. Jesse, I know you were there last week. I missed last week, unfortunately, but you were there last week to get that first 30 minutes of Wednesday's practice to see very little. We got to see a lot more today. Got to see some teamwork. Now, they weren't in full pads. They were just in helmets. They'll be in full pads potentially tomorrow, I believe. Is that accurate?
I think so. I asked Paul Christ after the media session, and that was his belief. So
okay, all right. So
it's going to happen, though.
Yeah. Either way, so you get 30 minutes last week. You get about an hour and a half this week. It was. I think there were some interesting takeaways, certainly. But I'd like to hear from you. I know that you did a running diary of practice, which is a new and interesting take on a practice report. I'm looking through it now. It looks like a lot of information there for anybody that wants to check it out at The Athletic. But for you, what was your biggest takeaway from today?
Well, the first open practice of the fall is always interesting because we finally get to see who's starting, or at least in the first group. To me, I wanted to see what the offensive line looked like, and maybe it shouldn't have been much of a surprise, but Logan Brown is still there with the ones at right tackle. Riley Malman is with the twos. Man, that is a position battle that I think is far from over, even though, you know, we didn't see a ton one way or the other in terms of offensive line play Monday. But if I had to pick a standout, and I imagine you may agree, but Skylar Bell to me looks like he's ready for a big role this season. And he really showed in the spring that he could be that number two wide receiver to complement Chimray Dike. He was a consistent playmaker. Again, we're taking a lot from a single practice, but that's all we've got to go on. He was making play after play after play. And I think he had probably the catch of the day on a great throw by Graham Mertz in the red zone, where Bell was basically draped by cornerback Samar Melvin and still caught the touchdown. So that's the kind of guy that they need to move this offense forward and to be a little bit more dynamic. And so I think that's a really good sign for the Badgers.
I would agree with you on player of the day, Skylar Bell. That's one I went with as well. It wasn't just, I mean, it was obviously those plays, but it was the way that he did it. He catches the ball with his hands. And I know that's just, it seems so simple, but catching the ball with your hands, not letting it get in on you at all, is very, very important, especially when it's in close situations and contested catches. And he came back twice on a couple of throws from Graham Mertz to go and get the ball and not let the DB have the first shot at it. And you could tell the DBs were pissed, right? Yes. I mean, they were upset when he was making these plays because they were right there. They were right on top of it. It's a really competitive group between the wide receivers and the DBs. We saw that in the spring with Chimray Dike and Justin Clark. And we saw that a little bit today with those two as well. But yeah, I mean, he did have it. And I know I asked Paul Christ about it after practice, and you know, it's about consistency with young guys. We only got this, I guess, little inside baseball here. I don't know how inside it is, but we usually get to see what, 8 practices, 9 practices in fall camp, about that usually, right?
Certainly more than we have this year. We'll have 4 this year, which granted is 4 more than a lot of other college football programs, but it's the fewest I can recall in fall camp.
Right. But that wasn't the point I was trying to make. What I was trying to say is today was the first day we got to see an extended period of practice. It's very possible that Skylar Bell has not been very good the first couple days, right? we don't know that. And we won't know, you know, we don't get to see another practice for a little bit here. And he may not live up to what we think he can be, or live up to what we've seen or what we saw in practice today. And, you know, we could be totally blindsided by the time, you know, the game comes around. But based on what we saw today, I think it's clear he's the number two receiver. Just based on what we saw today and based on what we saw in the spring, I think he is pretty clearly right now the number two receiver. And I don't know if there's necessarily I shouldn't say there's no competition, because again, it's such a small window of play that we got to see today. But I mean, who else is challenging him for that spot? I mean, Kiantas Lewis, Marcus Allen. I think, I think Dean Ingram is primarily going to be an inside guy. And I don't think that's necessarily where Skylar's going to play. So I don't think he's going to be in the mix. So I think it's Skylar Bell and Trimary Dike is your 1-2. And I'm not sure right now if someone's going to be able to jump either of those guys. I certainly don't think anybody's going to be able to jump Chimray, but I don't see right now someone jumping over Skylar.
I don't either. I think that's a great point you made. I agree wholeheartedly. If you see two wide receivers lined up in a given play, those two guys are going to be on the field, Chimray Dike and Skylar Bell. And then they'll figure out if there's a third wide receiver who they can trust, whether it's Kiantas Lewis or Marcus Allen. I do think Dean Ingram is going to contribute in some fashion, but as you said, I think he'll be more of a slot type of guy. Bell is making the progress that they need. I think we know, or at least we have an idea of what Chimray Dike is going to give Wisconsin, but they need more. I mean, they're losing I don't know if maligned is the right word, but Danny Davis and Kendrick Pryor were around for 100 million years. And I think you kind of knew what you were going to get from them, maybe not, I don't know, all Big Ten type of play, but reasonably consistent. That's still a lot of statistical output. And then you factor in Jake Ferguson as well. You need some people to help Graham Mertz throw the ball down the field. And I think Skylar is that guy. You mentioned Skylar and Chimray. You mentioned a play or the way he frustrated some of the DBs. There was a play on the left sideline. It was, I wouldn't want to say it's a 50-50 ball because Graham put it in a good spot, but Skylar basically ripped it out of the air from Ricardo Hallman and ran down the left sideline. And you could see Hallman was very frustrated. There was a towel on the ground and he just kind of chucked it to the sideline. But offensive standouts on a day where, again, not fully padded, you're not seeing people get tackled, Skylar Bell is at the top.
He definitely was. I mean, some other standouts, and again, it's very, very, it's hard to do this. And Paul Chris mentioned it after practice, trying to grade offensive linemen and defensive linemen for that matter. When you don't have the pads on, it's a little bit difficult. But, Keanu Benton, I think we all expect him to be an all Big Ten player. But there was a play during the team drills in the red zone where he just went right through a double team of Joe Tippmann and Michael Furtney. And again, no pads, so it's a little bit more difficult for the offensive line to work there. But he was in the backfield so quick, so quick. It was really, really impressive. Darrell Peterson had a rep where he was in the backfield like as quick as I've ever seen a guy get in the backfield. I just think this front seven, and Darrell Peterson wasn't with the starters, though he did get a few snaps there. Him and CJ Getz, I think, are probably battling for the spot opposite of Nick Herbig at this point. But those two guys stood out for me on defense as well.
Yeah, Key Island, there was another rep. One of the portions of practice that's always fun is the pass rushing drills. You get guys in the front seven going against the old linemen, and Keanu just tore through a guy. And I think you're going to see that a lot this season, but they've got a lot of quality in the front seven. Obviously the biggest questions are at inside linebacker. And I know we'll get to that as well as all the other positions and what we saw. We talked about it last week, if I'm not mistaken, that I think we both believe that the defensive line has the potential to be as good, if not better, despite losing Matt Henningsen, which says a lot about the two returnees that they have up there with Keanu and Isaiah Mullins, and also the potential of Rodus Johnson and James Thompson Jr. But yeah, I mean, I think Peterson is clearly going to be a factor. He's already earned the trust of Bobby April. We saw that in the Las Vegas Bowl, and he's a different kind of player from CJ Getz. April has called Getz the best run stopper potentially in the group, but Peterson, like you said, he's got some moves that you just don't see from every outside linebacker, and it seems to be coming much quicker for a young guy.
And it does appear that he has passed TJ Bowlers. I thought TJ Bowlers had a great spring, but at least today it looked like Darrell Peterson was the number two and Bowlers was three. And then on the other side, it was Herbig and then Caden Johnson. One note, we did see Aaron Witt leave the building today. He is obviously not on the camp roster due to his injury that he continues to get over. He is still on a scooter, but there was no boot today. So I don't know if that's a positive or not. I guess it depends on your view. But if he ever gets back on the field, if you have, and maybe if it happens this year, then you have a six that's just absolutely insane. And I don't think they've ever been deeper at that group. I don't think they've ever been this deep without Aaron Witt. If you add Aaron Witt back in, it would be pretty pretty remarkable. But that's a battle. It's going to be fun to watch. Can Darryl Peterson overtake the veteran in CJ Getz? I guess, you know, that'll be something that plays out. I want to go back to the offensive line and something that you mentioned when we first started talking, and that was the right tackle spot, because it was Logan Brown, as you said. Riley Malman was the number two right tackle. When Paul Chris was talking about Logan Brown, though, after practice, I thought it was interesting saying that he's having to overcome certain things. I know we've talked to Logan about this, but that shoulder injury, does it feel like that's something that's just never going to be fully 100%? He's never going to be all the way back to 100%, because if he's this far away from it and he's still having to battle through things, I feel like, and he's, you know, it's not playing with one arm behind your back, but it's certainly not at full strength, and having to play that spot in the offensive line without that is is very difficult, obviously.
Okay, so my interpretation of what Paul said was completely different.
Okay, all right.
And this is only an interpretation. My interpretation was the fact that he's referencing that Logan Brown is a diabetic and has battled through a lot to be consistent on that front.
Okay. You're probably right.
Maybe I'm giving away a story here, but something I hope to be working on. So I talked to Logan a little bit about this in the spring, and he's actually got a tattoo on the inside of one of his wrists that says what I can't remember if it was like type 2 diabetic or something like that. But it's a tattoo that he has there. And if I'm not mistaken, he told me that he got a matching tattoo with his grandma, who's also a diabetic. I think maybe she was another type of diabetic, but they were both have diabetes, so it runs in the family. And I know that that has been something that, look, that's not easy. You got to go get insulin shots, and you got to play at a really high level, and that can affect you day to day. And so that's, I want to be clear that that is my interpretation of what Paul is saying.
Okay. That actually makes a ton more sense. I still kind of think that the shoulder, at least it does, still is playing a role though. I mean, like him being on the right side, because of where the injury was, is better for the shoulder. He mentioned it in the spring. I'm not saying that that's what Paul was talking about. Yours makes a ton more sense than mine, but he's fighting in, I don't want to call it an uphill battle, but it's not simply, I'm a five-star guy, I should be playing and throw me in there. And if he's not out there, he's not living up to expectations. I think he had a lot going against him, or has a lot going against him that he's fighting against.
Yeah. And the fact that he'd spent his entire career and high school as well as a left tackle, and all of a sudden Bob Bosted comes in and wants to move him to right tackle. Maybe that's not that big of a deal. I've never played either spot, but it does take some getting used to. And I still think, like we said before, and maybe out of the spring, that Logan's going to get every opportunity to win the job. But I feel like Riley Malman is ready to play right now. He is, to me, of all the young guys, he is next in line and very well could be that guy this year. We saw him even get snaps as a jumbo tight end in the spring. He can play on either side, and it just feels like he's ready. So that's good news from a O-line competition standpoint, that there is legitimate competition and someone who can push a Logan Brown if he's not fully ready.
I'm just going to put it out there right now. I think I tweeted it, but it's a great battle. I think Riley Malman's your starting right tackle. I think, you know, when the season starts, I think he's your starter. And I could be wrong. If it doesn't happen the first game, I think it's eventually going to happen. I think he's a really, really talented guy. And obviously so is Logan. But where Riley has come from, you know, this is his second fall camp. He's had two springs because he came in early. So, like, he's got a lot working in his favor. And I do think it's going to be him. But, hey. It's going to be a fun battle, and we'll see how that one plays out. The other spots, no surprises, right? I mean, it's left tackle is Jack Nelson. Left guard is Michael Beach. Your center is Joe Tippmann. Tyler Beach. What did I say?
Michael Beach. I'll just let you edit it yourself.
Michael Tyler Beach. You didn't know that, did you? Did you know that?
No.
Yeah.
Well, I guess you weren't wrong.
No, I was. He goes by Tyler. So Tyler Beach. Is your left guard. Your center's Joe Tippmann. Your right guard's Michael Furtney. You know, as you guys found out at Media Day last week with Tanner Bordellini being your backup center, that one still catches me off a little bit off guard. And I understand where Bob Bostad's coming from, having to play your third string center back in, what was it, 2009?
Yeah, against Fresno State, it was Pete Kahns, which turned out to be a pretty good center in the end.
Was it? Because
was Pete Kahns.
Because didn't they have to, Travis Frederick had to be like.
Got hurt.
Was it?
Yeah, it was. Okay. Wasn't Moffitt?
Because Travis Frederick started the season opener against Northern Illinois, and he became like the first true freshman to start a season opener at Wisconsin in a long time.
Yeah, I know he got hurt, and Kahns was the number three.
It turned into being a second round pick.
Yeah, I mean it worked out, but that was Bosted's rationale, and his biggest trepidation is that he's been through that before, and he wants to make. I can understand it because Ed Tanner Bordellini talked about this too last week. That center is not a position like the other spots where you can just plug somebody in who doesn't have a bunch of reps. You've got to know all the calls. You've got to know all the responsibilities, and you can only do that by getting the snaps and practices. So Bosted wants to ensure that he's got two quality, capable centers. And one of the things that Bob also said last week is that he didn't reference Cormac Sampson by name, but talked about that obviously Sampson not playing this season. He got snaps at center last year. He said something to the effect of that loss changes the math in terms of how he wants to utilize guys. And so I don't know whether things would have been different if Sampson was out here for fall camp and maybe Bordellini would be pushing for a guard spot. I think you and I had talked several times since the spring that we felt like Bordellini would push at a different spot. And maybe that's still the case. I do think it's notable that when he was working with the reserves, not all the snaps were at center. There was a stretch where Dylan Barrett was playing center and Bordellini was at right guard. So maybe he gets some looks there later in fall camp. And the early part of fall camp is just for Bosted to feel comfortable that, okay, I've got two centers should something happen to Joe Tippmann.
Yeah, we saw Nolan Rucci as the backup left tackle behind Jack Nelson. We also saw Ryan Amalma get some work at left tackle with the third group, and Trey Redding get some work at right tackle with that group as well. So he's not moving guys all over the place. I'll say that, right? He's not there. You're not working. You're not cross training these guys a ton. They're spending a majority of their time at one position and then throwing a few reps towards the end of your team periods. Tanner Bordellini at right guard and Malman at left tackle and Wettig at right tackle. You're not spending a ton of time with those guys at that spot. And I think that's a little bit different than what, you know, Joe Rudolph has been doing in the past.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a big point that Bosted made in the spring that he wants to get guys ready at one specific spot. And the example that he had used then was Kevin Zeitler. He got him pretty damn good at one spot, and the guy wound up playing there in the NFL for, you know, it's been a decade plus. So there is some benefit to that. There are benefits and drawbacks to each coaching style, but this is the one Bosted is rolling with.
Yeah. So the other really, I don't want to, it was a standout, but really caught my eye was how good Ches Malusi and Isaac Guerrero looked, considering that what they're coming back from. Obviously, with what Ches, I was toward the ACL at Rutgers last year. We know about the foot injury that Isaac Guerrero dealt with, that he suffered at Illinois in the pregame. And yet, you know, Paul Chris told us at Big Ten Media Days it was going to be a situation where they were not going to take part, or they weren't going to work them too hard, right? They were going to be able to take part in fall camp, but it wasn't like they were going to overwork them. But what I saw from them today, Ches looks fluid. There didn't look to be any kind of a hitch in his giddy up at all that you could, that kind of you might be expecting in him returning from that injury. And Isaac Guerrero showed the burst and speed that we've seen a couple of times when he's actually been on the field that just goes, that makes you go, wow. It makes you always flip back to, I know we do this way too often, but I'm going to do it anyways. Flip back to the Rose Bowl press conference where we were talking to John Settle, the old running backs coach. And he said, he's got JT type athleticism. Like that's who he can be athletically. So both those guys, I thought, considering what they were coming off of and considering where my belief was, where they would be at this point, that looked really good.
It's a testament to how hard those guys have worked. And with Malusi, it's been 9 months since the ACL injury, and here he's out here looking like nothing ever happened. Neither one of them has a brace on. They each have a compression sleeve over their respective legs where they were injured, but Malusi looked really smooth. I don't know what his numbers and carry count is going to wind up being, but to your point, Paul Christ at Media Days down in Indianapolis said something to the effect of, it didn't, you didn't want Chez to go 100 miles an hour in the first practices because there really wasn't a reason to do that. But Paul, after practice on Monday, said that, I mean, basically he's been surprised in some respects that Malusi's getting more work than what the coaches initially anticipated here early in fall camp. But that speaks to, again, how well he's been able to bounce back, and the fact that practice number two, he's been able to build on from practice number one. It's not a situation where he feels tired or he's taken a step back. So to have those two back, it's absolutely huge for this offense. And to kind of piggyback on those two guys, another thing that caught my eye at practice, and I'm sure you saw this too, was just how often Graham Mertz, who first Mertz mentioned, Mertz alert, what are we, 20 minutes into the show, was spending a lot of time working specifically with the top three running backs on pass catching. And Bobby Engram was working with them as well separately. I thought that was notable. And maybe this is just the kind of storyline like we had a few years ago when Jonathan Taylor was there. And, oh, Paul Chris spent the first 15 minutes of the practice working on route running with them. But those three, I think, are going to be able to expand Wisconsin in the passing game. And I just thought it was interesting that there were at least three instances during the individual portions of practice where those three were going through pass catching drills for a good amount of time throughout practice.
That is, I agree that that's definitely what they were doing. And I noticed it as well. I also feel like if you're trying to draft a list of the things we talk about in the preseason or in fall camp, the cliches. And again, I'm not saying that's what you're doing, but I feel like the running backs catching more passes would be at the top of the list, right?
Like some years they do it and some years they don't. I mean,
but no, like I'm saying about working on it. Like yeah. Work, like, I mean, you know what, this is going to be a year they're going to get these guys more involved in the pass game. We heard that with JT. We heard that with Melvin. We heard that with Corey Clement. Dario Ogunbowale. They did with Dario Ogunbowale, and they did with JT. But like sometimes it happens and sometimes it doesn't. It just feels like, you know, it's kind of like, you know, today, Graham, when I think about what Graham did, he made some great throws and he took what the defense gave him.
Yep.
You know what? Hey, before a season, hey, Graham, what's the focus? You know what? I'm just going to try and take what the defense gives me. All right. Well, let's see if we actually go ahead and do what the defense yep. gives you. You know what I mean? Like there's a list of things that we talk about in the preseason. And I feel like getting the running backs more involved in the pass game is one of those. But when you don't have a legitimate, and you mentioned this earlier, you don't have a legitimate known threat at tight end right now that you can get the ball to, even though I think Clay Cundiff and Jack Eschenbach are going to be consistent options there. Getting the ball in the hands of your best playmakers, which is certainly Braylon Allen, and I think a healthy Chez Malusi and a healthy Isaac Guerrero, makes a ton of sense.
Well, those three guys, and granted, Malusi and Guerrero were hurt, and Allen wasn't a factor in the rotation the first month of the season, but those three guys combined to catch 17 passes for 111 yards. I think all three have so much more to give in that area, and I can remember Jonathan Taylor going into his junior season that one of the talking points was that you can still get him the ball, but maybe take some of the wear and tear off because you're catching the ball in space a little bit. Maybe they can do that with some of these guys. Certainly Braylon Allen is going to get his share of carries in between the tackles, but if he can elevate his game there, that makes a big difference. And Malusi and Guerrero with their speed, I think should be able to take advantage of plays in space. So yeah, I mean, at this point, so I suppose it is just a talking point, but the fact that it was emphasized in multiple portions of practice just says that I think it's something that they want to do. And even in the spring, you could see instances where there were four or even five pass catchers available on a given play. And you can't have that unless you've got a running back involved as well. So I just think Bobby Engram is trying to find ways to, it sounds simple, but get the ball to your playmakers and let them work in space. That's how this offense is going to thrive and not just be all run all the time.
Yes. Yeah, no, it will for sure. So the offensive side of the ball and some of the guys that we saw, I thought that there was an interesting back and forth, essentially a coach telling a player mm-hmm. you did the wrong thing. the Marcus Allen play where him and Graham Mertz tried hooking were miscommunication. And I think you mentioned it in your diary, that your practice diary, that it is going to be a situation for Marcus where he's still trying to get on the same page with everybody, right? Especially Graham, especially having not played a ton. And, you know, and Skylar Bell has certainly bypassed him. I think we all thought coming out of bowl prep heading into the spring that it was going to be Marcus Allen and Chimray Dike. And right now it's not. And I think maybe an indication of that was this play where Marcus Allen thought that Graham was going to see one thing and he took off in a route down the field and Graham saw another thing. It was going to be just a stop route and Graham threw the stop route and the cornerback almost had a chance to pick the ball off and Marcus Allen's 15 yards down the field. And you see Graham put his hands on his helmet and you hear Alvis Whitted saying, you can't do that. That's going to be an interception to Marcus Allen because he did the wrong thing. And I think that maybe is what's holding him back right now.
Yeah. You know, it's a single play in one practice out of many in the fall, but obviously I think Allen showed last season the potential that he's got. Even when he was on the field late in games, there were moments where he just went, whoa, that's kind of different for a true freshman to come out and make an impact like that. But it seemed like sometimes in the spring, maybe he was in his own head a little bit. And Alvis Whitted said even then that he felt like Allen was still trending in the right direction. But he also talked about that he needed to continue to play with more confidence. And I think a play like that, maybe I don't want to read too much into a single play, but it's kind of indicative of knowing how to do the right thing on every play, which is how you get on the field and gain the trust of your coaches. So one teachable moment, but certainly I still think he's going to have a chance to make an impact. But you're right. Skylar Bell has clearly emerged, at least at this point, ahead of Allen. But I think still there's a lot of potential with Marcus Allen.
For sure. The other spot that I think we have talked about it this offseason was the inside linebacker group. You know, with new coach Mark D'Onofrio, it appears that he is kind of doing the same thing that Bill Sheridan did in the spring, and that is working these guys in groups. And I don't think it's a rotation exactly like it was in the spring, but it appeared today that it was Jordan Turner and Jake Chaney. They got the first reps with the first team offense or the first team defense, and then the second group was Muma Jang Mehta and Tate Grass, and then those two guys were the first guys with the first team defense later on. I don't know how long that's going to last. As we said in the spring, I do think that Jordan Turner is going to be one of those guys. I don't know who the other one's going to be, but I just feel really good about Jordan Turner and then trying to find somebody else to fit in that spot.
Yeah, I certainly thought it was notable that Chaney was working with the first group, but don't want to read too much into that because the next time we see an open practice, it may be different. I'm with you on Turner. He played 24 snaps last season. I can't think of a guy who could play 24 snaps and make that big of an impact with six tackles and two interceptions. But I think there's also a lot of teaching that's still going on, and Mark D'Onofrio's got to learn these guys. He talked about it at Media Day last week that he's trying to come in, and really he wants to ask a lot of questions and be respectful of what's been done before and not try to change things for the sake of changing them because he's the new coach, because he's got to keep in mind he's the third position coach these kids are working with since December when Bob Bosted moved over to the offensive line. Obviously, Bill Sheridan was there for not very long before having to move on because of those alleged recruiting violations at Air Force. There was one sequence, and I mentioned this in my running diary, where you could see all the individual position drills going on. And at the far end of the field, D'Onofrio is there. There's four like of those gray rubber trash bins that are flipped over to kind of simulate players that the line has to go through. And it was just a lot of talking. They were standing around listening. And I think that there's a lot of that going on right now to try to understand each other. And what the responsibilities are going to be. And obviously they're going to get revved up here in the coming days with the full pads on. But I think there's got to be some type of learning curve here for these guys to learn each other. And it's the position that I think has the biggest question mark out of all of them because of who they lost with Sanborn and Chanel. So I think they're good players there, but I don't necessarily know that you can say outside of Turner, this guy is the guy and it's going to be, you know, a wrecking ball there.
Anything stand out to you about the safety rotation?
Nothing in particular. I guess John Torchio is still wearing a yellow non-contact jersey, but he was still out there. And obviously he was with Hunter Wohler. I think obviously what Wisconsin was able to do with the safeties in general was about as good as you could do based on where things were out of the spring. I think getting Kamoi Latu is going to be a big deal for them. But is there anything in mind that stands out to you?
Well, it felt like there were about 85 bodies back there
There are 85 bodies back there, and Cade Iaconelli's wearing number 25, which is the same number as Jake Ratzlaff. So that probably means Iaconelli has a little ways to go to to work his way in, since they just stuck him there. But yeah, they've certainly built depth, because they've also got obviously Titus Toler, which I had a chance to talk to him at local media day. It was kind of an interesting story. I mean, obviously he stepped away from football last August. Now he's back, but he talked about there was a stretch a couple summers ago. His girlfriend's Brazilian. He went to Brazil for like 4 months to clear his head, was on in this little village and was doing some farming and just totally unplugged from the world. And that actually kind of helped him regain his passion for football. That's just kind of a really interesting story, but I think Toler, you know, with some time can help them there. And obviously Austin Brown and Latu, there are 85 guys there. That's a long way of saying, yes, you're right.
Yeah, no, there are a bunch of guys back there. Preston Zachman, who missed a bunch of time, did not take part in the spring, had an interception in the end zone today. I guess that probably should lead us back to the quarterbacks. What'd you think of Chase Wolf today? What'd you think of Deacon Hill? I don't know if there was anything that really, I will say this. I after reading your story about Chase Wolf and, you know, why he's still here, and kind of like in talking about how trying to get his arm stronger, right, with some of the things that he was doing,
mm-hmm.
I kind of could see it. And maybe that's confirmation bias. I don't know. Having read it and then going and seeing it, like, oh yeah, that is stronger. But it did feel like he was zipping the ball a little bit more so than he had in the past. And then Deacon Hill's arm still very strong. Very, very strong.
Yes, it is. I don't know if we've said enough about Graham. I feel like he did his job today. I don't think there's anything like bad you can say. He clearly has a really good knowledge. That's the other thing that I think is really tough to decipher. And in games, when there is a mistake and it looks like it's on him, it's not always on him. And that's even more the case in practice. But there are so many instances where you can clearly see that he knows exactly what is supposed to be happening and not everybody is on the same page. That kind of stood out to me a little bit today. Even in when he was working with the three running backs, there was a sequence where he was showing them kind of the angle to take on what he wanted to see from the running back as they ran into the flat. You know, just small stuff like that stood out. But in terms of Wolf and Hill, I think we saw in the spring that Wolf had been working on his arm strength, because he delivered some really deep balls in the perfect place. He threw a couple deep touchdowns on the last day of the spring. And he talked about how he had worked this offseason with one of the assistant strength coaches on his core, and also Keller Crist, who's gotten a lot of praise since the spring, the graduate assistant who's working with the quarterbacks on kind of changing his arm angle to get more trajectory on his throws. I don't know that there were a ton of plays that really stood out that were Chase Wolf moments in practice today. But I think he gives them a quality backup option, and obviously is the only other guy who's played in the game. Your definition of quality may differ. It all comes down to can he take care of the ball? And I suppose like, the jury is still out on that.
I was going to say, I like Chase. I'm just, yeah. I mean, quality, I think the most important quality in a back quarterback is the ability to take care of the ball. And
that could be an issue.
Yeah.
But I can substitute a word. Like, he's experienced, he's knowledgeable, and I think he's capable if they need him in a pinch. The big problem, and he talked about it, is when you come in and you want to hit the home run ball because you're in for five plays or whatever and don't know when your next shot is going to be. He's got to be able to earn the trust of the coaches. I think it was more noticeable to me that Deacon Hill looked a little bit different. Certainly, I felt like he was more accurate, and he's a little bit slimmer. He's listed at 251 pounds on the roster. That's down 11 pounds from the spring. But I talked to him last week, and he mentioned that he had tried to get in better habits during the offseason and change his daily routine to put himself in position to succeed off the field. And he's also working on different types of throws and lower speed and different layers. There were some throws, though, and I know he's working with the third team group or whatever, but he put it on the receiver in a great spot, and the receiver was able to catch the ball. So I think he's made some good strides from year one to year two. But again, we're judging that off one fall camp practice so far.
Yeah, it's not exactly fair. Not exactly fair. A couple other notes before we get out of here. Jack Van Dyke working as a punter along with Andy Vujinovic and Gavin Myers. So, and he had an absolute bomb today. Obviously, he's not going to be the punter because Vujinovic is one of the better ones in the country, which is just insane when you see where he came from a few years ago. And then no Vito Calvaruso yet.
Yes, he has not kicked yet in the spring. He's in uniform, or in the fall. He was in uniform, but he was holding a whistle. So all the field goal kicks during the field goal portion went to Nate Van Zelst.
Yep.
And all the kickoffs went to Jack Van Dyke. Obviously, Van Dyke was a primary kickoff guy last year, but let's be real. If Calvaruso is healthy, the guy was an all-star kickoff specialist for Arkansas for 2 years. You would think he'd be battling, if not starting, at both of those spots. And I think the field job would be far more interesting than the kickoff one. And I asked Paul Crist after practice about Vito, and he said he felt like he would be back during fall camp, but has been battling something that he's dealt with before. And he doesn't know exactly when he'll be coming back. You know how I feel about Calvaruso. Love the leg strength. Just want to see him bomb 70-yard field goals. But you can't do that if you're hurt. So I think that's a position battle to watch, even though it may not be as sexy as, you know, the offensive line at Wisconsin.
Yeah. Nate Van Zelst went 4 for 5. He missed his kick from 45. His hit 4 others all inside 40, which is very on brand for a Wisconsin kicker.
Yes.
Tight end Cam Large, who went down with a knee, with an injury last week, is not on the roster. What is it? The 110 for players in camp. He's expected to be out for an extended period of time, which is unfortunate. He was coming back from a knee injury as well. Alexander Smith not practicing. That was not considered to be serious. They're expecting him back soon as well. And anything else before we get out of here?
Well, Spencer Lytle is not on the 110-man roster either. Obviously came in as a highly regarded outside linebacker. They moved him to the inside, and in the spring he got hurt. I talked to him last week too, because he was made available to reporters. He said he had a bit of a hip injury. This is not a new injury. Apparently coaches thought he would be good to go or more closely available here in fall camp, and that's just not going to happen. So a guy with a lot of potential who's dealt with injuries throughout his career is another notable name is not on the 110 here as we get into week 2 of fall camp.
All right, Jesse. Really appreciate your time. We'll catch up later.
Sounds good. Thanks, Zach.
All right, there he is. Jesse Temple from The Athletic. You've been listening to The Camp.